It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And sounds like a broken record, but we are here in the studio again on an absolutely lovely Saturday morning in Northeast Florida. The streak can go on as long as it wants to. In fact, we were just talking about that this week. We live like this for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's been such a nice spring so far.
Did you guys get out on the boat Sunday?
We did, and it was beautiful.
I was thinking about that all the time. You were out there, supposedly out there, and it had to be just stunningly beautiful, I would think. So, you know, if you don't live here already, stay where you are. It's busy enough. But if you're contemplating a move, I got to say this would be a pretty fine one. And first off, let's welcome everybody back. All the regulars, you know, we count on you to always be there so we can keep the show going and feel like there's a purpose to it. And if you're new, whether you just discovered it or someone told you, you left your radio on, whatever the heck it is, out erranding, try to stick around for the whole hour. You will always learn something. We will promise you a little bit. We will promise you that. And I think what just happened, we should acknowledge a bit. I'd like to congratulate Angela Walker. She has taken a different job. It's the same job, different company, totally different, apparently, and met the owner just in between shows, and Angela and the smiles on their face are, they make it very evident that this was a good move, and I'm excited for her. She's having a little spark, never heard anybody do the same line of work for a long, long time. Once in a while, you got to shake it up just a little bit, as we did 10 years ago.
Yeah, we did.
Shook it right to its roots, and it has worked out just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Best thing that ever could have been done. Anyway, gosh, I don't even know where to start this week. There's so much going on in so many arenas, and throughout all of it, just market managed another good week. Now, April has 2 days left to try to make up for its reputation because it is not leading up to a normal April, but it's a really nice comeback. And I think that deserves some talking about. And for that, I'll turn it over to he who talks about that.
Yeah, I would go a little bit further than a decent week. It was a really good week. It's actually a huge turnaround from a week ago, and it made a big dent in what looked like we were heading for losses for the year, and this week really turned things around and made things look a lot better than they did. It was a great week. And what's even more remarkable about it is that Thursday morning we saw the Dow down about 600 and some points, and it actually turned around that day too. It didn't get positive, but it ended down about half that, around 300. And so the cause of that was that there was a GDP report that came out on Thursday morning before the bell, and it was not great. It was well below expectations, and the real troubling thing was that the inflation numbers looked pretty bad. To the high side. So
one of those would say that's pretty good news because the Fed is going to do something, and the other one says no, they're not.
Yeah. So I don't think that expectations shifted dramatically for rate cuts or hikes this week, but the market is saying we're not going to see any rate cuts this year. Which, if you listen to the show, we've been saying all year, and there was never a real clear reason to me why they would need to cut rates.
No, and it's never been clear to me why he has this need to do his own forecasting of what he's going to do in public and then have to change his mind and disappoint everybody. It's just, you know, we have given him credit where it's due.
Yeah.
And he'll continue to take credit if we see what he describes as the soft landing. I'm not seeing it.
I mean, I think we're in it.
Maybe, but I think maybe we bounced already. This inflation, I got a little proof for this one that we'll get into after the first break, but this isn't going anywhere for a little while.
Right, but what the soft landing referred to is not entering a recession. And so far, we have not entered a recession.
Although the GDP numbers I mean, half.
It was still positive by 1.6%. So it wasn't a terrible reading on its face. It just the expectations were higher. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's again, he's got a really tough job. Powell is, I think his biggest flaw is the need to publicly forecast what he's going to do later. His probably best point is that he doesn't hold himself to those forecasts because exactly. when things change, he adjusts.
You got to give him credit for that, too. You know, if you're going to stick your neck out, you better not be afraid to get it cut off and by your own knife.
Yeah, but say I was wrong. This is the new plan. And so he has done that, and it's been pretty successful so far. So I think that most people thought by now we would be in or through a somewhat mild to moderate recession, and it hasn't happened.
Well, they didn't count the one we had a couple of years ago.
That's also true, but I mean, I don't even know if that one is relevant for what people were thinking for this one.
I don't think so. I'm thinking now that we're finally over COVID. Maybe we're, not quite.
Not quite.
96%.
If you look at most of the trend lines, it looks like a heartbeat monitor with like with COVID being a heartbeat. You saw things spike off the charts and then drop down off the charts, and now it's back to the longer term trend line.
But with systemic changes in society.
Absolutely. Too. I mean, you don't have to look any further than the real estate market to think of a good example of systemic changes.
Yep. And just the whole work from home thing, even though it's easing up a bit, how many people do you know that do 5 days a week in the office for any kind of size company? The ones that have had to go back are usually being requested three times or twice or something like that.
Many cases.
But the drudgery, the 9 to 5, 5 days a week with the commuting, that just doesn't really exist that much anymore.
No, it sure doesn't. I mean, outside of service industries where you have, like, if you're in a medical profession and patients come to your office, you have to be there. But anything else, any type of job that is doable by computer, it's almost guaranteed to have changed somewhat.
It's got to hurt the tire industry, I would think, from all those cars not being on the road, all that extra mileage.
Well, that's the really odd part, because the traffic has not, it's gotten worse.
Yeah, they're going other places, I guess so. Except to work. But, you know, there's 7 million of them that won't go to work, so they just drive around.
We have a bunch more on the market wrap, but we're getting close to a break here. But I will say that there were a few losers this week, but they were not easy to find, and there were definitely a lot more winners.
Yeah, and I really like where the S&P 500 is right now. We're only 4 months into the whole year, and it's at 6.9 already.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have another dramatic pullback and that thing just keeps plodding along, this is going to turn out.
You can see a really good year.
Yeah, and you know, when a good year follows a good year, it's a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
Because the number that you're compounding on top of is larger to start. So I think there's a lot of optimism to be had yet, and we'll get to some of it right after we take a quick break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. And while I'm at it, call us at 904-222-8255, and you can take a shot at this. We gave Congress gave us, you know, one way or the other, how those things happen. IRS got a giant increase in their budget this past year, $79.4 billion increase to IRS. How much more money did they collect this year than the year before with all that extra money being spent? And I'm not going to tell you anything about it. It's just how much money. So the bracket is wide open, people. It's a pretty good one, though. I think you'll absolutely love it. All right, back to the market. There were several details that are probably worthwhile. I thought the most notable thing that happened was Tesla came in with a miss, and got a 12% boost in a day.
Yeah,
or something
the
like
market
that.
Was expecting even worse.
Yeah,
we already knew their deliveries were way down. Yep. So the expectation was that they were just going to have a flop, and they kind of did, but it was a less of a flop than what was really expected.
The silver tongued devil.
Yeah. I mean, well, and their stock had been beaten up already. Mm-hmm. It was one of those situations where they had lost a lot of market value leading up to the announcement. So there was mostly good news this week. There were a few losers. This wasn't a loser, but growth really outpaced value again. That's been a trend for quite some time. You see it flip-flop for a week or two every once in a while, but it's been growth all the time recently. Technology and consumer discretionary gained over 3.5% this week. Materials, energy, healthcare, and communication services they all gained, but it was all less than 1%. So pretty wide gap between the winners and losers in the S&P. So far this year, there's only two sectors of the S&P that are down. Real estate is by far the biggest loser. It's down over 8%, while consumer discretionary is off 1.4%. Commodities, in general, have been having a great year, but there were some losses this week. The index managed a gain of almost 1%, but you saw agricultural commodities were off 1.8%, natural gas was off over 3%, gold was down 2%, and silver was off 5%. So how did the index go up? Oil gained 2%. I think that has a outsized weight in the index, and that's why you saw it rise.
Yeah, look at its size in the world economy, and it's not a big surprise. As goes oil, pretty much goes the index.
Mm-hmm. Well, interest rates were only very slightly higher this week. The bond market was generally lower, so that was one of the losers. The exception to that, though, was short-term treasuries. They actually gained 5 basis points. Longer-term treasuries were down more than 1%, though, so some real movement in the yield curve during the week, and that had a lot to do with that inflation report coming in hotter than expected. International stocks also had a really good week, and the biggest mover was somewhat of a surprise, I thought. Hong Kong saw a big breakout from recent levels, and it actually traded up 8.7% just this week. It's really surprising. Well, first of all, their market is still down 8% this year, even with an 8% up week. So that tells you how bad it's been. Their chart looks great right now. I am still very skeptical.
I don't trust them.
Nope. The Chinese property market, the real estate market over there, is just in shambles. And I don't really know what the catalyst is going to be to get them out of there. The Chinese stocks did not do very well this week. They were up less than 1%. So this was a Hong Kong-specific trade. And I don't know. I am very, very hesitant to jump back in on anything related to China right now.
Would you call their real estate market, shall we say, oversupplied?
Yeah. And apparently the values have been reduced drastically, like 30% or something like that. And people are having a hard time even getting loans to buy anything because the lenders don't want to lend on something that's losing value that quickly. And it's just a mess.
It is indeed. Who would have known that when they were building entire cities with nobody in them?
But that was like 15 years ago. And then no one's in them today.
No.
So it's just bizarre.
16 laden roads going in and out of these places, and there's not a car on them.
Yeah. Very, very odd. There was some other good news internationally. Spain and the UK were both up over 4%. Germany and Mexico were up over 3%. The all world except US index was up 2.7%. And emerging markets actually were up more than that at 3.7%. Now, a lot of that could have been driven by Hong Kong, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I just can't trust them, even Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I trust them more than the mainland, but I'm still skeptical.
Yeah, me too.
Taiwan. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, people are obviously the market's looking ahead, but I just don't know what's going to get China out of their current mess. I really don't see it.
Yeah, we're building something like 6 gigantic semiconductor factories in this country right now, and they can't get done soon enough to suit me.
Yep, I agree.
That Taiwan market is very scary. All right, we have. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Oh, never better. How are you?
It's a great morning.
It is.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just agreeing with you.
What's up? Well, I wanted to comment on the Chinese market. It's Secretary of State was just over there this past week, Blinken, and I happened to be one of the few days listening to NPR, and which is not something I usually do, but anyways, it was on in the car, and they were interviewing a Chinese economist, and it was actually a very fascinating conversation and interview. And she was, in my opinion, very blunt about the economy in China. And it was surprising that she was so blunt. But anyway, she was talking about how not only is the real estate a problem, but just the entire economy of China is a problem. And that in the beginning, several years ago, she said that his government was working very hard to create a middle class in their society. Mm-hmm. And she said that has now switched to being completely focused on the larger defense sector spending. And so, you know, obviously there's a tremendously high unemployment rate among the younger groups of people there, and they are, you know, struggling to their retail businesses are struggling because people are, of course, saving money. They are great savers, the people are. And so it was an 8-minute long podcast, which, if you know, and I don't know if you mind me mentioning NPR, you can find it online. It was either on Wednesday, I guess it was Wednesday. It was the 8 o'clock, roughly the 8 o'clock hour. It's 8 minutes long, and I would recommend just listening to it. It was eye opening to me. Yeah. It was amazing to listen to. Real estate, of course, is the biggest problem there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they have other problems. I mean, it's not just real estate.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, you think they'll pull a Jack Ma on her?
I don't know. Well, I hope not.
The last time she's ever heard from.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know. I was thinking the same thing. She was, obviously, when you listen to her, she's very well-spoken, highly educated, very informative, and it just kind of, I was thinking about maybe picking up some of the FXI ETF that morning, because it has a very decent looking chart pattern.
I was
like, okay, you know, this kind of fits my setup. And then I go to an appointment and I listen to her, and it was like,
If you're into charts, check out the Hong Kong index chart, and you will see a classic definition of what a breakout looks like. It is pretty remarkable this week.
Yeah. Well, breakouts for me, the longer the better, the tighter the spring, the better. And then, you know, as long as you get that breakout on some really decent volume, that's kind of like worth very seriously, you know, keeping an eye on, because if you can get, you know, after the breakout, you get a leg down and then it starts to go back up. I think that's telling.
Yes, definitely.
Well, there's certainly good reason for that to happen off of the mainland. I'm not sure on the mainland what it's going to take there. There's still a lot of people in poverty, but as you said, she's saying that it's not a priority right now to bring those people up into the middle class, and that's absolutely necessary if they're going to get rid of any of this.
And that's kind of what we've been talking about over the last couple of years. It seemed like a couple of years ago there was a major shift in their thinking.
Away from capital.
Right, and back to the more traditional role of the Communist Party. And it was almost, you could almost see it happening.
Hey, Greg, I got about 30 seconds. You want to take a shot at the IRS collection number?
I don't have an answer for the question.
Okay.
Well, stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Because you're going to find
it. All right.
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Lots more after the break. I did want Adam to mention the earnings season, which is just starting to ramp up now, and it's quite important. So we'll do that and then get into some other things. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will get to the phone in just one second, but I wanted to reiterate the trivia question and the fact that our phones are open, 904-222-8255. IRS got a budget increase of $79.4 billion last year. So what did the Treasury get for all that money they spent? And for a shot at it, we will talk to Good Morning Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How's things?
Oh, hanging in there, you know. Good. You get a little wary about what's going on in the world and the United States.
Well, we're going to solve all the problems real soon because Biden says he's going to debate Trump, and that will take care of everything.
Yeah, speaking of Biden and his proposal, I was going to touch briefly, if you'll let me, 44.6% on capital gains.
If you didn't bring it up, I was going to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. The last time capital gains was reduced was by George Bush from, I believe, 28 to 15, and they actually increased revenue.
Yep. Yeah, and the time before that. Yeah, time before that was Clinton, and revenue increased too.
Yeah, and you would think they'd learn, but I read that Bill Gates might have bent his ear to this proposal. That wonderful figures. Man that he is.
Yeah.
But they say that it would make states like California and New York, they could see their rates go up as high as 59%.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
There's nothing good about this proposal.
No, it's
by
terrible.
Experts.
It's terrible. In fact, a friend of mine sent it to me on Thursday or Friday, in a text, and my immediate response was, "There is no way that his tech donors will let this happen. There is just no way. Silicon Valley is the area that this would hurt the most, and there is no way that they let it happen."
Yeah. So you think it's dead on arrival?
I think
Wall
so.
Wall Street is not going to like it.
No. It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea in every way. There is nothing good about it. It will not increase revenue. It will not do what they even intended to do. So why would you go through with it? It's dumb.
Exactly. I agree. And what really gets me is the reason for it is supposedly, again, equity.
Yeah.
Equity was mentioned. You know, that this will make an even playing field.
Right.
It's total
garbage. I think
garbage.
Even an even playing field is when everybody pays 15%, isn't it?
That's what I would consider an even playing field.
But maybe, that's just a word, even.
I agree.
Yeah.
Very quickly, Steve, I know you're a reader like I am. There's a very interesting book that I'm delving into. It's called To Make a Killing by, it was a gentleman by the name of Arthur Cutten, C-U-T-T-E-N. The book is To Make a Killing by Robert Stevens. It's about this man, Arthur Cutten, who went to Chicago, if anybody remembers Carl Sandburg, Hog Butchers of the World, and in 1890...
You there?
You drop on?
He was known as the Modern Midas, but then the crash came in 29, and the Roosevelt administration went after not the gangsters, but the banksters, and he became the top villain of the IRS... and the Security Exchange Commission, and they moved the Grain Futures Administration, moved to bar him from trading, and they tried to get him for tax evasion, but he was smart. He won on every count. He emerged from the Senate investigation unscathed. He maintained his grain trading privileges. He got a victory in the Supreme Court and left almost nothing for the tax collectors upon his death. Very good book, To Make a Killing.
Sounds fascinating, and I will look into it. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's all I got.
Shot at the trivia question?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. I once read that we got less in 23 than we got in 22, but we still collected $4.7
trillion. Mm-hmm. Well, you're kind of on the right track. You want to take a shot at by how much less?
How much less? $200 billion?
Yeah, you know, you're uncanny. You either have a really good computer at your fingertips or between your left ear and your right ear. I'm not sure.
I read a hell of a lot. But once in a while, I do go to the computer.
Okay.
Best gentlemen on the best fiscal show.
Yep. We the people spent $79.4 billion extra on IRS. They've returned to us minus $200 billion in collections, and Congress beat the crap out of them because they actually clawed back $1.4 billion. What a return on investment.
Yeah, really
exactly.
Smart.
That's really why smart. I say, what a country. Boy, you oh boy. We seem to be going in the wrong direction in every way, shape, and form.
It's so true. We appreciate the call. We got your address, and we'll take care of it.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You spend, $78 billion net and collect $200 billion less. I got an idea. Take the money back and put that $200 in the bank, and, hey, solved a little piece of the deficit right there. It's incredible. If we ran our business like that, we'd have been out of this studio 9 years ago.
Well, we couldn't afford this studio anymore. Right. So, yeah, it's unbelievable, but also not surprising, which is sad.
No. But I appreciate Mike bringing it up, and I love getting book review notifications, too, because, like you said, I'm a reader, he's a reader, and I read some doggy books and things like that for fun, but I always like to keep up with what's going on and economically and so on. So we appreciate it, and we'll move on here. We wanted to talk about earnings before we dump the market.
Yeah, we're kind of in the beginning of the heart of earnings season right now for quarter one. And so far, so good. About 73% of companies have beaten their earnings guidance, while almost 63 have beaten their revenue targets. So those are very strong numbers. Companies that have given forward guidance on earnings haven't been very positive, though. And that's like the kind of the one thing that I'm keeping an eye on. But at this point, 406 companies have reported. So we still have a long way to go. We'll see if those numbers hold.
Yep. But so far, no panic button.
No.
And you know, in a business cycle like this, when things are pretty good, no CEO is going to be sticking his neck out way, way far. That's just not going to happen because they can get their heads chopped off by the public and the media and all that. All right, we have Good Morning Marshall.
Good morning. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah.
You are loud and clear, boy.
Great. Thank you. Well, first off, again, I want to thank you. Every Saturday morning when I listen to you guys, I learn something.
Well, that's our purpose here, so I appreciate hearing it.
I need to learn more, okay? So I appreciate that. In your book recommendations, I just finished one that I've now found a lot of my friends have read, and it goes to our economics today, even though it wasn't written as a business book. A Land Remembered. Have either of y'all ever heard of that book?
I have
no. I'm surprised.
It's a historical fiction based on fact.
Okay.
About someone before World War II who lived off the land in South Georgia, moved to North Central Florida, and eventually became extremely wealthy. But as cheaply as they lived, I mean, the original Florida crackers, okay? just thinking how wonderful it would be to have 1 pound of flour to occasionally make some biscuits, or a little bit of meat other than a possum they found, or swamp cabbage. And Dr. Chet from FCCJ had spoken to our FPA group, I think it was December, and was explaining how successful the economy had been and why we have such values in it. And he was talking about the construction. He showed all his charts and graphs. And it started hitting me. Look around us today. How much construction, and I'm not talking about single-family residential homes. I'm talking about all the other items are going on in our market. We are so blessed to have so much. And yet I think some of it is at the expense of some of these other places where people have finally gone, you know, I think I need to leave here to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, the numbers have borne it out. I mean, Adam was reporting on this as far as a business destination and a retiree destination and a worker destination. We are ranked real high nowadays. There's just so much to do here. And the other thing is we've got land, and most places don't, even though we're landlocked to the east. It's a big place, a really big place. And that helps.
It is. Well, again, thank you, gentlemen, for my Saturday weekly education.
Well, thanks for the tip.
Yeah, thanks, Marshall.
I got my reading list growing now, so I'll be checking in as I knock these things off the list. So we appreciate it. Always fun. And by the way, just to be fair, we've learned a lot from you, too.
Definitely. Marshall is our resident reverse mortgage expert, and he really has taught us a lot about
them. And you know, Marshall, if you're still on, I don't think he is, but if I assume you're listening, the thing that I really appreciate is when you brought up that the counties are all doing this thing that's kind of like the LifeLock deal where your title insurance or title policy, it's not even the policy, just that your title itself is being watched over for free by the registered deeds and but county by county, so you don't have to pay for that. And we have spread that information far and wide. And it makes a difference. So thanks again. We do appreciate it. Okay, you want to?
Yeah, last seconds. Real quick, I wanted to mention that last chance for Florida prepaid college open enrollment. It ends on April 30th. So you have a few days if you want to get signed up, your kids signed up for this cycle. Florida Prepaid is it's a great program. Check it out if you haven't started college funding for your kids yet.
Yeah, and what will happen is that when it closes and doesn't open until late this year, you're going to have a year older kid, which means more money.
More money, yep. So,
okay, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a few little goodies to clean up right now. Adam's got a great story that is directly related to the things that we like to talk about. But first, I wanted to bring up one silly little thing. How many of you remember where you were 51 years ago last Monday? Adam probably does not.
No.
Do not. But a lot of people in my generation do. That was the original Earth Day. I was in Madison, Wisconsin, where, as you can imagine, was quite a celebration. As liberal a spot as you'll ever travel to in your life. And I just looked through a few things this morning to see what they were talking about then. And it is incredible, the dire predictions of 51 years ago, Monday. And a lot of you of a certain age will remember a fellow named Paul Ehrlich. He was probably the worst of all of them. By 1980 or 1989, we're all going to be dead. The world's going to be...
What was it, acid rain or
like whole sunshine, nitrogen, pollution, smog, on and on and on. You guys remember smog? Denver and L.A. in particular,
for
the
sure.
basins. And you go there now, seems to me the air is pretty clear. And it wasn't because of him. But anyway, he didn't die until 2015. I think he was born in the 30s. So apparently his own predictions weren't
quite accurate.
Yeah, missed a little bit. He became amazingly quiet after about 20, 30 years of that stuff. But I just wanted to bring it up because it was an event in my life just being there and listening to all this stuff. I knew right away it's a bit crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, football and money.
Yep. So I read this great article in the Wall Street Journal this week. It was about a defensive tackle from Florida State. His name is Braden Fisk. He was a transfer from Western Michigan last year. Excellent player, and he just really shot up the draft boards at the combine. His measurables were off the charts, and he just got drafted to the LA Rams in the second round. But the real interesting part is that because of the changes in college football, what's known as NIL, or name, image, and likeness, college athletes are now allowed to get paid for their services. And apparently he got somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000, and he was thinking about what to do with that money. And he was watching all his friends go out and buy cars and clothes and a bunch of other things. They all basically blew it. And he sat back and thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what I know to be the responsible thing. And so he opened a brokerage account and put it in, invested it over the last year, and he did quite well. He said his best investment was the S&P 500 fund. His money was at Fidelity, and that was up over 20% in the year that he was playing for Florida State. So he actually made a bunch of money, and then he just got drafted in the second round and got really paid. And so now he can go out and buy that car.
Absolutely.
It was a good story.
It is a good story. And wish there were more professional athletes that would take heed, especially the ones that are really young, because getting a chance to earn that kind of money while you're still in college, it could set you up for a good long time. The lifespan, the working span of most athletes is pretty short. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Excellent. And you?
Very well. I do have a problem.
Okay. Sure.
I need to make an appointment to come by, maybe Monday morning, and have somebody hit me in the back of the head with a baseball bat. I've been listening to Kramer, and he's starting to make sense.
I'm glad I was sitting down when you said that.
Oh, my gosh, help me.
What little bits of information, timely information, did you deduce from Mr. Kramer these days?
Just earnings and things like that, and, you know, it's like, and he's so bullish. It's like hardly ever does he see something going badly, you know, and it seems like he owns just about everything in his charitable trust fund, you know.
He probably does. And,
yeah.
The man is a highly paid entertainer.
That yes, is he is. Sure. Yes, he is. And I know better. I'm old enough to know better than this is just a show. You know, I could be watching Bugs Bunny cartoons and probably get better information.
20 years ago, when I was very new in this business, people used to ask me if I watched Kramer. And I said, why? He said, "If let me ask you something in return here. If I pushed my sleeves up and got on top of my desk and jumped up and down and yelled and screamed, would you invest with me? Because it
sure
seems to work well for him, doesn't it?
It sure does. Oh,
what a mess. But,
big booyah to you guys.
We're a little more subtle, perhaps, but
yeah,
certainly not
wallflowers. I did have one question, and yeah. I know if I thought of it, it's got to be wrong. So I just thought
we'll test your theory.
What do you guys think about leaps? I'm looking at selling a call on Amazon 11 months from now. And it would be at a guaranteed 14.5% return for those 11 months. And the problem is, you know, obviously I'm taking a chance Amazon goes up by 40% in the next year, and I'm losing out.
Would you rather have a bird in the hand or shoot the moon?
That's, yeah, yeah. That's and hard. Also there's a possibility Amazon goes down, and I don't feel it because I already got, you know, 25 basis points.
For people who understand it and want to do it, we cannot do business like that. We're not allowed options. So I used to be pretty good at it back in the 90s because I wasn't in this business. And lately, we just don't pay that much attention. But as long as you use the covered versions of any sort of trade that way with options and futures, just don't get yourself in a naked position. And,
exactly. Yeah. And the key to options, at least doing them in a safe way, is limiting your risk. And any, as long as you don't get in on what you were saying, is there are certain types of options where your risk is unlimited.
Yeah.
And do not, I highly recommend not getting in that position. But as far as a covered call or something like that, if that's something that you are knowledgeable about and you feel strongly that's the right call, then go for it.
I see no downside to making money slowly.
Okay.
Yep.
I would never do a naked put or call. Yeah. In fact, my brokerage won't even allow me to do that.
Oh, okay, good.
Yep, that's good. Yeah.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Well, we'll be taking a while.
It's a hell of a good return, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, 14.5% in 11 months.
Yeah. Tried to top that with a risk asset, and I don't think I could.
And what I like, I get the money right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like a CD where you wait till the 11 months are over, and now you get your money. You get your money today.
Yeah,
and I don't know if they – I don't even think Amazon – pays a dividend, but if it did, I still
they haven't
the dividends.
Yeah. Google just paid their first one. It's a
I saw that.
It turned
20 cents.
Yeah, it turned into a mature company. I was asking Adam if he remembered when Apple paid his first one, and it was so long ago he doesn't remember, but I do.
Oh, that's, I do too. Yeah, when I go back to like 95 with Apple.
Yeah, exactly. When the company starts making so much cash that they're running out of ways to spend it, they give it back to the shareholders, and I'm just standing there with my hand out. I'll take every one of them.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I don't care if it's a 0.5%. That's good. That's good by me.
Absolutely.
Well, the company may be mature. The employees, not so much.
I'm certainly not.
All right, Joe.
I'm not on their side in many respects, but I think that was a good move. Okay. All right, take care. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's something it might be kind of fun, but you have to be in that kind of business. Or you have to be a very active customer of somebody to be in that kind of business. We would not have the time to do it right. And if you don't play options well, don't play them at all.
Yeah, we would have to have a whole trading department, or it would just not. It's just not something that we could do right now.
Now, I mentioned in the very early part of the show that I see a problem with inflation, and I said I would tell you why, and here it is. Those of you who are familiar with M1, M2, the money supply, you will understand this. The M2 is rising. That's just cash, savings deposits, and retail money market funds. It had been falling since April of 22, and that has changed. It is now up just under 1% from a year ago. That means the Fed is no longer withdrawing money from the economy. It is putting money back in the economy. And it's that excess spending, that excess cash chasing too few goods and services that is by definition inflationary. So I'm going to keep an eye on this. By the way, I get this from Fred, which is another thing Marshall turned me on to a while back. So thanks again, Marshall. Fred has some great statistics, and if you want to look at anything like that, just go there, and you'll find things you didn't even know you wanted to know, like that one. Just a little something. Another one, something we talked about just recently. Susie Orman just did something that I think requires a bit of explanation. She got an insurance quote for her homeowner's insurance on a 2,100 square foot Florida condo. It was $28,000.
What?
$28,000.
Why?
For a 2,100 square foot condo on the ocean.
That makes no sense.
She dropped her insurance. What's the difference between Susie Orman and you and everybody else out there?
She can afford to self-insure.
Tens of millions of dollars in several houses, West Coast, East Coast, the Bahamas, etc. Sell if you run into that. Don't go naked on that either. You know, there's no other way to put it. She can do it. You can't. I can't. Adam can't. So don't. Real simple. There. I told you you'd learn something today.
There you go.
And it was that Susie Orman is a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
That's how she got where she is. All right. We are going to have to knock it off. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks to all the callers. You make our jobs a lot of fun, and I think everybody else likes it. See you next week, same time. This is the Banway Financial.